Hello, I'm Keith Parent, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio International. Today, we have a very special program. It's called The Thai Cave Rescue. The miraculous rescue of 12 boys and their young football coach, trapped in a flooded cave in Thailand, has been followed around the world. It was a global operation with divers from several different countries. Its chances of success or failure were finally balanced. In the end, there was jubilation. The BBC and their team now present a special program looking minute by minute over the 3 weeks that they were trapped.
How many of you? 13. Brilliant.
I'm really happy.
We are happy too.
Yes, thank you so much.
10 days, no light, pitch black, no solid food, just catching literally water drops dripping from the stalactites above. Amazing.
All around the world, we've been watching the remarkable story of survival. It involved 12 young boys and their football coach who had been trapped in a flooded cave in the north of Thailand.
People thought they were dead, thought they wouldn't make it out. We didn't even know they were alive. They didn't know if anyone was coming, if help would ever reach them.
This was a difficult mission. Success was by no means guaranteed.
You know what, to be honest, when I was at the site, I was really worried for the boys. I wasn't sure they'd make it because we were hearing so much about how difficult the journey was. And we knew, it was difficult even for trained divers.
But in the end, the emotion was jubilation.
Believe in God, they sing. Only belief can move a mountain.
It's one of the global good news stories of the year.
The 9th ambulance just left here and headed away down the road, taking another...
And we've been reporting on it every day on BBC Minute as well.
I'm Priyanka Daladia.
And I'm Tom Kavanagh. On this programme, we're going to look back over the past 3 weeks and take you through the events day by day as they unfolded.
Hi, my name is Nanchanok Wong Samut. I'm from the BBC Thai service and I've been covering the story that's been described as the greatest cave rescue of all time.
Let's start right at the beginning with the 12 young boys and their football coach.
The boys are 11 to 16 years old and they're from a football team called the Wild Boars. I spoke to a 14-year-old from the team and he told me that the plan was to cycle to the cave on their bikes after their football practice.
There's one other person who's going to help us tell the story as well.
Hi, I'm Helia Cheung with the BBC News website and I've just got back from Thailand.
We'll also hear from Ben Raymonds. He was one of the foreign divers on the rescue team.
That specific cave is never dived, and I don't know why. It's way too dangerous. So it's only visited when it's dry season and absolutely dry and people walk in there. It's one of the longest caves in Thailand with 9 kilometres of length and a pretty complex system.
Something lots of people listening want to know is, what were the boys actually doing in the cave in the first place?
I think for the local community, it's more that it's the local cave. And for Thai children, you know, they often go on excursions, they go around exploring the countryside. It's not considered a big deal. And they'd actually been in the cave a couple of times before. We're not sure exactly why they went in this time, but it looks like it was one of the boy, Knight's birthday, and they'd bought a lot of food at a local shop. And a lot of people think what happened was they were going to go in the cave, maybe to have a ritual there, or in any case, they wanted to go in to celebrate his birthday. And it's possible the coach followed them in.
Diver Ben tells us what the conditions were like inside the cave.
It's a huge cave entrance. It's stunning, actually, like a muddy, raging river. And then gets smaller and smaller as you go along. And then it just turns into a small passageway that you follow along until it gets really small, just about half a kilometer before the kids were. That's where it gets very small, to about 2 feet high. So you're really crawling on your belly through the water.
And I've also been told by locals that not many Thais go to the cave.
And this cave has a special significance for the local community, as BBC Thai reporter Nachanak explains.
A lot of children who I spoke to who live in the district of Maasai told me that they've been warned by their parents not to enter the cave because it's kind of haunted and protected by cave spirits. But a few who have entered the cave, they stayed only at the entrance, and they said it was because it's too scary to go inside because it's too dark.
So let's begin at the start of the story, June the 23rd.
So on that Saturday night, the parents were getting worried as well because the boys hadn't come home, and also staff in the park had noticed that there was some equipment and bikes outside. So the search started overnight, and the relatives were quite worried, so they were already gathering outside and waiting.
Sunday, June 24th, the Thai Navy SEALs begin their search.
A friend of mine, a fellow cave diver, he connects to the Royal Thai Navy SEALs. He realized the Thai Navy SEAL did not have such expertise in cave diving. So he called me up and says, hey, do you want to come and assist the Navy SEALs in their attempt to reach the area where the kids are trapped? And then the call came.
Monday, June the 25th, the search becomes international, with the US military and divers from various countries arriving to help.
Meanwhile, the local community was praying for the boys' safety. Here's Nachanak again.
Religion has played a really crucial role in lifting the spirits of the relatives of those boys and the coach. Since day one, they've been praying to what they believe are the cave spirits who are protecting the cave, and monks have been invited on a daily basis to perform rituals.
Monday, July 2nd, a significant moment. After 9 days of anguish, both inside the cave and on the outside, the boys are found.
Thank you.
How many of you? 13. Brilliant.
This video clip was taken by one of the two British divers who found them in the first place. It was really emotional. A lot of people who didn't know the boys personally, they actually started crying when they knew that the boys were alive. In the clip, we could see that the boys were speaking to the divers in English, and the divers were flashing their torchlights in their faces. Everyone who saw that was feeling very emotional, very happy.
It was unbelievable that we'd found them and that they were all healthy. We were just very pleased trying to establish how many of them were all right, and as it turned out, all of them were. At that point, they were quite pleased. We spent a fair bit of time up there really trying to boost their morale before we left, because we didn't have any food to give them. We had lights to give them.
John was one of the British divers who first found the boys 4 kilometres away from the entrance of the cave. Here's Hellier again.
They seemed thinner than before. Their relatives said they noticed they'd lost weight. But apart from that, they seemed remarkably well, considering it had been 9 days. So they were able to talk, they were responsive, and they were all sat together on a ledge. So you could see they were really still sticking together as a team.
Do we know what they were doing in the 9 days? I read somewhere that the coach was helping them with meditation.
Yes, that's what the Thai Navy SEALs say, because the coach used to train as a monk. It seems like when they'd established themselves on the ledge, the coach taught them how to meditate to keep them calm, and so they would use less air. The coach apparently also taught them to drink water that was dripping off the cave rather than the dirty water on the ground.
The boys had no idea how long they'd been down there, did they?
No, and one of the first things they ask the diver when they find him, you know, when they're found, is what day is it? And the diver explains, oh, it's Monday. So you could tell they'd lost all sense of time.
As well as bringing in food and oxygen, the divers also passed on handwritten letters between the boys on the inside and their parents on the outside.
Don't worry, Mum and Dad. I've been missing for 2 weeks. When I get out, I will help Mum in the shop and I'll hurry to get there.
Mum and Dad, don't worry about me. I'm fine. Tell my brother to be ready to bring me fried chicken. I love you.
I couldn't believe that I was looking at scans of the handwritten letters the boys had written from inside the cave. So the moment I saw them, me and a translator sat down because we thought, this is a huge story. We're hearing from the boys properly for the first time, well, in their own words. And I could tell the translator was quite moved as well. It makes for really moving reading because you can tell from the handwriting these are teenaged boys. Some of them draw hearts or smiley faces. And the message they keep telling their parents is, don't worry about me, I'm fine. And then there's also some cheeky bits, like they say, teachers, please don't give us too much homework. Or they say they talk to their parents about the types of foods they want to eat. One of them even says, don't forget my birthday party. The parents also wrote letters back to the boys, and those were really moving as well. They pretty much told them, we don't blame you, look after yourself. We're waiting at the mouth of the cave for you to come out. And specifically, the parents wrote to the coach and said, we don't blame you for what happened, and please look after our boys, and thank you for looking after our boys.
But don't worry about me, and don't forget to do my birthday party.
I miss you, Mum and Dad. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself.
Next, the mission to get the boys out of the cave.
So they were thinking of three options. One was to teach the boys how to dive so they could dive out with them. But that's really difficult because some of the boys couldn't even swim. Parts of the passages are completely flooded and it's really dark. People say it's a bit like swimming in cold coffee because it's murky and it's dark. Because some of the passages are really narrow, some are so narrow that you can't even swim through them with an oxygen tank on.
Flooded, dark, poor visibility underwater. A lot of difficulty.
That's John Volanthan, one of the two British divers who were the first to reach the children, sheltering on a dry ledge several kilometres inside the cave complex.
So they were quite worried that if the boys haven't swum before and they panic, then that's quite dangerous. Divers were telling the BBC at the time, it's much too dangerous, you know, we can't do this, some of them can't even swim.
Extremely dangerous and hazardous. Having somebody in zero visibility that's not familiar with overhead environment and that kind of extreme conditions, it's very likely that they would panic and either kill themselves and or the rescuers. So
the voice you just heard is Ed Sorensen, an experienced rescue diver, talking to us about the potential perils of trying to bring the children to the surface.
The other option was to try and pump all of the water out. The governor actually called it a race against the water. But again, that was tricky because they were pumping out tons of water each day, but at the same time it was raining and they knew monsoon season was about to start.
Had you noticed a change in the climate while you were there?
You know what, I could actually notice a difference in the weather because the first 2 days I was there, it was really dry and really sunny and unrelenting. But then as we went on, there were days when it just wasn't as sunny and you could feel it, there was a bit more damp in the air. And then there were some days when there were brief showers. We could tell that the monsoons were definitely on their way. The army were also scouring the top of the mountains because they were trying to look for other passages and crevices and other ways into the cave where the boys were.
And they were using drones, weren't they, to try and fly over and see if there were any signs that there was a tunnel or anything? And I guess they didn't find anything.
Yes, they looked at thermal drones, but they couldn't find anything. And people point out, you know, it's a huge mountain, several kilometres of rock. It's actually really hard to find a passage there that may or may not lead to where the boys are.
And the mission was made difficult by the fact that it was raining quite heavily, right?
Yes, especially when they're trying to pump and get the water levels down. But on the one hand, it's raining, and on the other hand, groundwater is seeping into the cave as well.
You're listening to the BBC World Service, and this is the story of the Thailand cave rescue.
We're taking you through how the events unfolded. Friday, July the 6th.
Today, there was a tragic moment. The death of former Thai Navy SEAL Sergeant Saman Gunan.
A sadness. It's really knocked people here now that whatever happens to the boys, this has already become a fatal incident. It's really upset people that someone who'd volunteered his services to offer his expertise, his experience of diving, and that he lost his life doing that late last night. He was on his way.
Helia, you were obviously outside the cave when the news broke. Just tell us what that was like.
Yes, that was a really tragic moment, in fact.
He was on his way back from having dropped off some supplies where the children are when he was running out of air and slipped into unconsciousness. And although they were...
The atmosphere in the camp changed when they learned that someone had died, because previously when they realised the boys were alive, there was quite a jovial atmosphere around and it was very hopeful. But the death of the former Navy SEAL just really hit home how dangerous the path is. And in fact, the mother of one of the boys told her friend that at that point, well, she was distraught. And she also said, if an experienced diver can't make it through that passageway, then what chance does a boy who can't swim have?
Rear Admiral Arpakorn Yukong Kao of Thailand's Navy paid tribute to Saman Gunan, the diver who lost his life.
He was very self-sacrificing. He used to be a Navy SEAL, but he had been retired for several years. When this incident happened, he knew that he could help, so he volunteered. The mission was very risky, scuba diving in conditions we had never been in before. I think he's a very self-sacrificing person, and the sacrifice that he made was highly honourable. The people of Thailand and the people of the entire world respect him and have honoured him as a hero.
Some of my colleagues talked to him, the wife and the father of the Thai Navy SEAL as well. He'd say, I love you to his wife every day. He always said, you never know when you'll die, so it's important to appreciate all the time you have. But they also were proud of the fact he had played an important role in the rescue mission, and the wife said he was her hero.
And we've been told that every support will be given to his family, but it definitely has affected the mood here, but not the urgency of this operation. Indeed, it's enhanced it, if anything, now that people are aware of exactly how risky this job is.
Sunday, July 8th. So that's the first day of the rescue. So just tell us what's going on.
I realised something was different when I woke up and got a bunch of notifications on my phone. They said, we can't get to the cave anymore. We're being asked to leave. We have to find a new base. And then as we were driving over again, we got stopped at checkpoints where we hadn't been before. Security officials initially said, well, you can't go through. You have to go away. And eventually they said, OK, you can go through, but stay out of the way. All the journalists were a lot more tense, and the security officials seemed to be a lot more businesslike as well. All the volunteers had pretty much left, so there weren't people serving out food or handing out ice cream anymore. While all this was happening, we know the divers were going in large groups so that they could take out the boys, and there were two divers to each boy.
This is completely uncharted, unprecedented territory. So nothing like this has been done. So of course there were doubts.
They gave a press conference at around 11 that day, I think, but they announced that the rescue operation had already been underway for an hour. So once we heard that, we were all just camped outside waiting to see what would happen.
So how long was it from the time that the rescue operation started before you saw the very first ambulance?
We were expecting the boys to get out at about 9 that night, but actually it went more smoothly than expected. So by around 6, we started seeing ambulances coming in and out. Some people could hear helicopters because the boys were being brought to hospital by helicopter as well. Initially, we could tell the air was a bit more tense and security officials were telling everyone to back away. But we thought it was just a VIP visit. We didn't realise that actually some of the boys were out and they were taking them down as well.
After the first day of the rescue, we knew that 4 boys had been brought out, but we weren't told which 4 boys had been saved. Did their families know at that stage who they were?
It seems like the families didn't know either. And in fact, the families couldn't even see them initially, which was incredible. The Thai authorities said they wanted to make sure the boys hadn't caught any diseases while they were in the cave, and they didn't want them to catch anything off their parents unnecessarily either. Probably about a day or so later, the parents could see them through a glass window, and eventually the parents were allowed in the same room as them, but they still had to keep a 2-metre distance.
How did the parents feel about all of this? Because they were just so anxious to see them. And when they did finally get out, they just had no interaction. They were just interacting with them through a window.
You can tell from the footage, as they're waving through the glass, they're extremely emotional, but they're also really happy to see their sons. And you can tell they can't wait to just give them a hug.
Were the families speaking to the media there? What was the atmosphere like?
They've done a lot to try and protect the family's privacy. But when I saw them at the site earlier, you could tell a lot of them were quite tense and waiting, and they didn't particularly feel like talking to people. I think they found the media attention quite overwhelming.
And Helia, is this all happening during daylight hours, or is the rescue going on through the night as well? Because obviously most of the action's happening in a dark underground cave anyway.
Yeah, you'd think it doesn't matter if it's day or night, but actually they did pause the formal rescue operation overnight, and that's because some of the divers needed a rest, but also they had to replenish their air tanks. So they spent the overnight hours basically setting up the route again so that the divers could go in the next day to bring more boys out.
Monday, July 9th.
4 boys were brought out on the Sunday. Mm-hmm. Talk us through what happened on the following day. At this point, there are still 8 boys and their assistant coach inside the cave.
There was a lot of excitement in the town, and you can tell everyone was watching the news, but just waiting to see if the other 8 boys and the coach could get out. So there were people waiting at the hospitals, trying to talk to the families, and also people waiting at the cave as well for more activity. Remarkably, on Monday, the rescue actually took 2 hours less than it did on Sunday. And that seems to be because the divers had managed to refine the procedure and also because the conditions continued to be good. So it was pretty incredible.
Were they communicating all this to the media there?
They were quite secretive about some of it because we would know that at the end of a day, 4 boys had been out, but we wouldn't know exactly how they did it and we wouldn't really know the details. The divers had been given strict instructions not to talk to the media, so there wasn't that much information coming out.
One of the divers, John, who originally found the boys and took part in the rescue, gave us some of the details.
We essentially strapped a cylinder to the front of the child. They had a full face mask, which is a way of making sure that they can breathe. We had a handle on the back of the child, so you always need to transport someone face down so that any water runs away from their face. And we were able to manoeuvre them in that way, although they were still clipped to us so that if we lost them in the visibility, we would always be able to find them immediately.
Most of the boys couldn't swim, and it's a really difficult passage to navigate, even for an experienced diver. Did you know at the time that the boys had been sedated? How much did you actually know about the mechanics of the rescue operation?
At the time, they didn't give us any details of the rescue operations. So we were wondering, have the boys all managed to dive out through such a complicated path? We knew the water levels had receded after Chamber 3, which means that at that point they could walk. But we were surprised at how quickly and how well it seemed to be all going. Of course, since then, the BBC's talked to a number of people who've said that the boys were heavily sedated, and that's why they were probably only semi-conscious. And that would probably have helped the rescue divers, since there's no risk of them panicking.
They were sedated. They were unconscious. They were breathing.
The doctor administered drugs to make them sedated.
Yeah, well, they had to, because obviously it would be a lot of a risk.
Once they went out of the wet, flooded areas, they were attached to stretchers. And at that point, there were pulleys that take the stretchers along. And there were volunteers passing them from one to another as well. So you could tell there were lots of people involved.
The second day of this complex and risky mission went as well as the first. Four more boys were escorted out by a team of expert divers through the flooded caves that had trapped them for more than 2 weeks.
Tuesday, July 10th.
When you woke up, there were still four boys and the assistant coach inside the cave. Just tell us about the conclusion of the rescue mission from your perspective.
People were so happy when the final boys and the coach came out. In fact, people were on the streets and waiting near the hospitals. And when the final ambulances came by, people were clapping and cheering. Around the local district, people were honking their horns as well. You could tell people were just really happy and so relieved that all of the boys and the coach had come out.
So that's the story of how the boys were saved. You'll have already seen pictures of them recovering in their hospital beds.
So with the rescue now over, what thoughts are we left with?
I suppose globally, what it really showed was sometimes there are causes where everyone wants to get behind them and help however they can. Sometimes, you know, that really works, because this was really an international rescue effort. There's no way the Thai Navy could have done it by themselves. And in some ways, they needed experts from all around the world to pitch in.
We'll give the last word to Ben Raymanon. Over the past few weeks, he and his fellow divers have been at the heart of one of 2018's biggest stories. Their actions have earned them the adulation of people both in Thailand and further afield, but most insist that they're not heroes.
I have some geeks that were doing the risk calculation. In first of all, the risk that they were going to get to a higher place and not being flushed out. Secondly, the chance that we would find them. Thirdly, that we would all be healthy. And like lastly, that we could come out alive and well. You have more chance winning the lottery. I'm not very religious, but it's a real miracle that they got out, all of them.
You've been listening to a BBC Minute special on the Thai cave rescue, a story which has captured the imagination of millions of people around the world.
That was a special programme that comes to us from the BBC World Service, looking at the Thai cave rescue, which eventually ended up being a success. If you enjoyed this program, please let us know. As you're probably aware, over the past couple of weeks, we've been bringing you some longer feature stories. That's because we are currently on holiday, and the only newsroom staff for Focus Asia Pacific that's operating as normal is the program that goes out three times a day to the Pacific on shortwave and, of course, on FM relays. But for our case here, for the program that goes to our partner stations, we're bringing you a couple of special programs, and we still have about three more before we actually get back to normal. If you'd like to let us know, or if you have any comments or questions, our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. In the next few weeks, we're going to be announcing a phone app for PCJ Radio International, which will be available through Android and through iOS. Now, the phone app is going to be very different, because some of you are probably only familiar with this edition of the program that you're listening to right now. But with the phone app, you'll be able to listen live to PCJ Radio International, to our services to the Pacific, and to East Asia, with two different audio channels. including live programs that we produce for the Pacific that go out every day. Will also be heard live through the phone app. Now, just stay tuned, and we will give you more information about that as soon as it comes to us. Anyway, that's all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you very soon. Bye-bye.